Let's go out to our guest line and talk all things basketball with our NBA insider. Let's go and welcome from SheridanHoops.com, Chris Sheridan, everybody. Morning, Chris.
Morning, Armando. How are you?
Doing great. The Sports Brothers, Jeff and Ed, are here.
What's up, Chris?
What's up, Chris?
Hello, fellas. I just got off the phone with Perkins. He says hello.
Oh, he couldn't call us now.
Right. You're trying to make him work already, Sheridan? Is that what you're trying to do?
No. I tried calling back. I wasn't ready when the producer called, so I tried calling back. I got the switchboard, and so I called Perk, and I said, give me a better number, Perk. I got to get into the studio. So
beautiful.
I bet he got greeted with a...
Chris Perkins is working for you even when you think he's off.
That's right, and that's why we pay him the big bucks.
That's why we imitate him by saying, hey, hotcakes.
That's right. So, Chris, you know, eventually here, Linsanity, you've heard of that, right? Linsanity? You've heard it?
Yeah, look, kid from Harvard by way of Palo Alto. Yeah, we've touched on it a little bit on Sheridan Hoops.
Yeah, that Jeremy Lin guy. Eventually, the New York Knicks will be at full strength, and they'll get Carmelo Anthony back. When they get Carmelo Anthony back, will they be a better team, or will they ruin team chemistry?
Well, they'll be a better team. I mean, come on. Let's not forget that Carmelo Anthony played pretty well with a good pick-and-roll point guard when he was playing with Chauncey Billups, both in Denver last season and then in New York when Chauncey came over in the Carmelo trade. And one of the problems why Carmelo was having a bad season and the Knicks were having a bad season is that Tony Douglas was the point guard for that team until Jeremy Lin took over. And Tony Douglas is not a good, number one, he's not a good pick-and-roll point guard player. Number two, he loves to take the three-point shot, but he's not very good at it. And number three, Carmelo ended up playing a lot of point forward where the ball, you know, he got called a ball stopper, but he was kind of a ball stopper because if the ball didn't get into his hands, then Tony Douglas was going to launch a bad three. So what's going to happen when Carmelo comes back is Jeremy Lin's going to run the pick and roll with Tyson Chandler and Amari Stoudemire, and he runs it very well, and it's going to make defenses collapse, and there's going to be kickouts available to Carmelo for the open mid-range jumpers that are his bread and butter. So instead of Carmelo having to create the offense all by himself, Carmelo's going to be the beneficiary of Jeremy Lin's passing skills, which are very good passing skills. The kid does more than, you know, he goes to the basket and he finishes around the rim really, really well, but I think his passing skills are underrated. He had 14 assists last night, and he tried an alley-oop from midcourt right off the opening tip last night that almost went in. So the Knicks will be a better team with Carmelo Anthony playing alongside Jeremy Lin than they were with Carmelo Anthony playing alongside Tony Douglas.
Chris, well, maybe you can answer this for us, and you know, Armando and I are of the just want like to ask the question, as a lot of people are asking, having seen Carmelo Anthony's body of work the past 9 years, why do people ask that question of this guy who's some may say a superstar in this league, and he is a big star, he's a superstar, but why do people ask this question? Why has this question even come up about Carmelo Anthony?
Well, because the Knicks have won seven in a row with Jeremy Lin stealing the show, and Jeremy Lin is the flavor of the week, but I think people tend to forget the bigger picture, and that's that, you know, if you got a guy out there who can give you 30 on any given night, and plus you gave up half your team to get him, he's worthy of you know, the praise that's been bestowed upon him throughout his career. And, you know, I guess people want to fall in love with one guy at a time. Maybe that's what it is. And so there's a little bit of fear in New York that when Carmelo Anthony comes back, this Linsanity is going to come to a halt. And I think it's overblown. You got to let these guys play a little bit together and then see how Carmelo meshes with Jeremy. And I think, you know, give them 5-10 games to work together and everybody will be placated in New York because, like I said, Carmelo Anthony needs a good pick-and-roll point guard to draw defenses into the middle and to kick the ball out and to give him more open shots and allow him to knock down those mid-range jumpers, like I said, are his bread and butter.
Chris, how impressed have you been with the Miami Heat and the way they've been playing ball lately, the back-to-back-to-back wins in a record-setting fashion? How impressed have you been with these guys?
You know, on an 11, as they say, in Spinal Tap. Well, you know, we're going to turn it up to 11. They had the speakers that didn't go to 10. They went to 11. I mean, these guys are playing at a level that is insane. And just compare these last three games, the back-to-back-to-back road victories where they were all blowouts, to the last three-game road trip that they took. And that was the one where they went out west and they lost all three. And they came back and they had kind of a soul-searching meeting. And they've turned things around ever since. LeBron is playing the best basketball I've seen him play since the playoff series when he was with the Cavaliers and they finally got past the Pistons. Now it's 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago. He hasn't played at this level, anything near this level since then. And but you know what? People are going to judge him in June. Mm-hmm. And people are going to judge him on what he produces in the fourth quarters of close playoff games. And as great as he's playing now, I mean, his field goal percentage is off the charts. And with the way they're running more this year, it really plays to that team's strength. And they look like a beast. They look like they can beat anybody in the NBA and beat them easily. I tend to differ. I think the Chicago Bulls can play with them, and that series would go seven games. But to be in mid-February and see him playing at this level, it's exciting to watch for the first half. But usually the end of the first half, you know, the game's pretty much over, and then you start flipping around because you know the Miami Heat have already won. And, that's a testament to a great team when they're only worthy to watch in the first half because they're going to kill somebody.
Do you think that Eric Spoelstra has a unique problem here because these guys, they haven't brought this kind of focus on a consistent basis? They drive Armando crazy here. And do you think that they become bored at some point or another?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Look, it's a grind. You know, a regular 82 season is a grind, and this compressed 66-game season is even more of a grind, and you're just not going to get up for some teams the way you get up for others. And you saw that with Miami and their two losses to the Milwaukee Bucks. And one of the things that they've done since that second loss is they've come mentally prepared every night for every opponent, no matter how good or how bad. And that comes from the leadership within the locker room, whether it's coming from Eric or whether it's coming from Dwayne and Chris and LeBron, and everybody, you know, kind of speaking their piece. They've definitely made a concerted effort to take every game as seriously as they would a game against the Lakers or a game against the Bulls. And that's a big mental jump to take, and especially it's an especially difficult one to make in a season where you're playing so many games on so many nights, and fatigue is going to set in at some point, and you're going to want to take a night off mentally. And the Heat haven't done that, and that's to the credit of both Coach Spoelstra and the three stars.
Let me ask you a question that Shaquille O'Neal has pointed out as a concern of his, which is fourth quarter execution. Shaq feels as if this team still has a tendency to go back to bad habits late in games where they isolate and they settle based on the great abilities of Dwayne and LeBron. And he feels like that can be a concern, as we saw a couple of weeks ago against Chicago, a couple of erratic possessions. Your thoughts on what Shaquille O'Neal said?
Well, I kind of agree, and you got to go back to that game against the Bulls a couple weeks back and look at the final minute. And you want to talk about erratic possessions? Those were not just erratic; they were horrible possessions. LeBron just dribbling away the shot clock, and on one he took a horrible contested jumper, and on another he waved off the pick and roll and drove and tried to shoot over a 7-footer and missed. And remember, he missed two free throws as well in that final minute. And again, that's why I say LeBron's going to be judged in June, and he's going to be judged on his fourth quarters. And eventually, the Miami Heat are going to have to play a tight game, and then it's a whole different equation because, number one, who gets the ball, Dwayne Wade or LeBron James? And I still think at the end of the day, if it's a game seven, and you need to put the ball in one of those two guys' hands, Coach Spoelstra's going to put it in Dwayne's hands. That's my prediction for when the moment of the season comes against, you know, whenever it comes against whichever opponent. I think Coach Spoelstra has more faith in Dwayne than he does in LeBron. Shaq does make a good point, and we've talked about this before. There's only one basketball, and on a team with two two guys in, you know, who need to have the ball in their hands, one of them's not going to have it. So, you know, how's that going to work out when it's most important? That's what we all got to kind of be patient and wait for. But, you know, Shaq says a lot of things. He also said Andrew Bynum's the best center in the league going into the Magic Laker game, and then Dwight put up 25 and 24, and Andrew Bynum's best his highest total that night was 5 fouls. So Shaq is funny, and Shaq is good, but Shaq is not always right.
Chris, take that same scenario and put it on the New York Knicks. Who gets the ball at the end of the game? Is it Carmelo Anthony or is it Jeremy Lin all of a sudden? And if it's Carmelo Anthony and he fails, what happens in New York?
Everybody asks, why didn't Jeremy Lin have the ball in his hands? But to answer the first part of your question, I think in a similar scenario, you put the ball in Jeremy Lin's hands and you see what he can do to break down a defense. And I tell you, teams are really overplaying him to make him go left. The book on him is he can't go left whatsoever. And so teams are going to try to make him go left. But he's proven himself pretty deaf that it's starting left and then getting to his right. And he gets into the lane and he breaks down defenses. He does it kind of like Derrick Rose does. He just gets through guys. And then it's a matter of what is Jeremy going to do? Is Jeremy going to shoot it? Is he going to drop it off to the guy, to the picker, whether it's Amari or Tyson, or is he going to kick it out to Carmelo? But I think if the Knicks have 24 seconds for one key possession to win or lose a game, the ball starts in Jeremy Lin's hands, and then whatever Jeremy can create, they'll take the shot that they get off that. It might be him, it might be one of their bigs, it might be Carmelo, but it'll be a better shot than they would have gotten with Tony Douglas running the point.
Knicks, Clippers, Lakers, Magic, Bulls, Pacers. Where does J.R. Smith end up in your from what you've been told?
Well, from what I'm hearing, he's going to go to the Knicks. The Knicks have a $2.5 million exception. It's called the mini mid-level exceptions. It's one of the new things that came out of the collective bargaining agreement. And the Clippers gave their mini mid-level to Kenyon Martin already. And the Clippers also have Randy Foy and Mo Williams playing the two-guard spot. That's even with Chauncey Billups out for the year. So the Knicks have Landry Fields starting at two-guard, and they use him on Shumpert there a lot. But there's a big hole in New York at the two-guard spot. And, look, Mike D'Antoni teams need a shooter. They have to have a shooter. It's part of the way the 7 seconds or less offense works. And Jared Smith's put up a 60-point game in China, several 40-point games. He's shooting the lights out. Now, they don't play any defense over there, but, you know, J.R. Smith can shoot with the best of them in the NBA. You know, right now, Ryan Anderson is the most prolific three-point shooter in the NBA, and when he's clicking like he was last night and like he was against the Heat last week, you can see what a dangerous team the Orlando Magic is. You know, the Knicks have a lot of components, but what they don't have is a shooter. So I think that's where J.R. Smith's going to end up, in New York on Broadway.
Hey, Chris, before you get out of here, it's hard to imagine an offense in the NBA being anemic with Kobe Bryant on it, but that's exactly what's going on in Los Angeles, where the Lakers are scoring a record low amount of points. What's going on out there, and what is Mitch Kupchak going to do to get these guys some more, you know, offensive weaponry going into the playoffs?
Yeah, well, we talked about this last week, and I still think they're gonna use the trade exception from Lamar Odom. They can bring in a guy making up to $8.9 million, and they don't have to give anybody back. And I think Kirk Heinrich is the guy that they're going to end up getting, because he makes $8 million. He fits right into that exception. But as far as the Lakers scoring goes, look, they miss Lamar Odom's production off the bench. There it is. If you look at the drop-off in points and you look at what Lamar Odom gave them last year, and the numbers match. They don't have anybody coming off the bench giving them anything. And until they make a deal and have the team that they're going to go into the playoffs with, you can't really fully judge them and fairly judge them. But, you know, they are a team that's scoring a heck of a lot less points than they used to. And they're in a phase of the season, or Mitch Kupchak is in a phase of the season where he's having trouble making a deal, because teams want to kind of figure out what they are this year and where they're going to be and whether they stay in contention or not. But the Lakers definitely need a scorer off the bench. And with Derek Fisher, he's going to be their starter until he retires. But if they can get a guy like Kirk Heinrich who can score either from the three-point line or from inside it, I think they'll be all the more better off. And with the largest trade exception in the league, the Lakers do have a lot of flexibility to make a deal. So, again, let's judge them after the March 15th trade deadline rather than judge them in the middle of February. Now, you guys aren't going to let me off the show without talking about San Antonio, are you?
If you want to talk about San Antonio.
Yeah, the big, bad, boring Spurs, they're only on a nine-game road trip. And you know what? They've won nine in a row, and they're only a game and a half back Oklahoma City in the Western Conference race. And they just won the fifth in a row on this trip. They're undefeated on this trip, and they got Manu Ginobili back. And at a certain point, people have to say, hey, wait a minute. The Spurs, you know, the Spurs can beat anybody. And I'm one of the people that's trying to make that argument because the Spurs have been doing that. Nine in a row is the longest winning streak in the NBA this season, and they're doing it on the road where they had a real bad start to the season. Their home record is 13-1, and even with all these wins in a row on the road, they're only now an 8-8 road team. So, but watch them. They got a lot of young shooters surrounding their big three of Parker, Ginobili, and Duncan, and they're off the radar because they play in a small market, and they're kind of a ho-hum team to watch. They're just always there at the top of the standings every year, and then people gain respect for them as they make their way through the playoffs.
There's two words you got to add to that. Jeremy Lin. Nobody's paying attention. Everybody's paying attention to Jeremy Lin.
Yeah, except Tony Parker had more assists last night than Jeremy Lin, and so did Steve Nash. So Jeremy Lin sat out the final 15 minutes of that game. If he had, if that was a close game, he might have broken the Knicks team record for assists, which is held by. This is a tough trivia quiz, guys. Who holds the Knicks record for assists in a game? I'll give you a hint. He plays in Florida right now.
In Florida? Ooh.
He plays in Florida right now?
He plays in Florida right now.
Who?
She's either on the Heat or the Magic.
On the Magic,
there's like five or six transplanted New Yorkers listening right now that are yelling, Chris Tuhon, Chris Tuhon, Chris Tuhon.
Wow, oh my yes, God.
It's Chris Tuhon. And,
not on the radar.
He broke Richie Guerin's record a couple years ago. And Jeremy Lin, he could have had 22 assists if they had needed him, but he spent the final 15 minutes of that blowout on the bench last night. And and so we'll have to wait to see if the next chapter of Lin's sanity includes a Knicks team record for assists. But the kid can really pass the ball, and he's really turned around the New York Knicks. And there's more excitement over that team in this city than any time I can remember since the mid-'90s when they were going year-to-year, head-to-head against the Chicago Bulls in the playoffs.
He is Chris Sheridan. Hoops.com. He's our NBA insider, and he just picked the San Antonio Spurs to win the NBA championship. we'll talk to you next week, Chris.
Okay, fellas. Thanks again.